Okay, guys, it's summer fun drive time at the Scott Horton Show. Bills are piling up and equipment is wearing out. So here's the deal. Anyone who donates $50 or more gets a chance to win a week's vacation for two to Costa Rica. Drawing is July 15th. Winner, go whenever you want. See more details at scotthorton.org/raffle. Anyone who donates $100 or more gets entered into the raffle, plus a 1-ounce silver QR code commodity disc from commoditydiscs.com. And the first 25 people to donate $100 or more will also get a copy of Your Money or Your Life, Why We Must Abolish the Income Tax by Sheldon Richman, or the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism versus Capitalism, narrated by me, for free. Stop by scotthorton.org/donate or scotthorton.org/raffle for details. You can also sign up for monthly donations by way of PayPal, per interview at Patreon, support with Bitcoin, and shop through scotthorton.org/Amazon. And thanks.
All right, guys, welcome back. Hey, check it out. I got Gareth Porter on the line. Hey, Gareth, how are you doing?
I'm fine. Apparently, we couldn't get the Skype connection.
Yeah, I think I could hear you a little bit, but I think you couldn't hear me. But that's all right. Don't worry about it.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, these things happen. I hate Skype so much. You know, the audio quality is so much better, and yet the technical difficulties that come with it are ridiculous. But yeah. The point being is that you wrote some things, and so I want to talk with you about them, of course, because I always want to talk with you about the things you write, because things you write are always right on topic for what's most important to me, and yeah, along the lines of telling the truth about what they're lying about, they being the war party. Obviously. And so, first of all, I really do owe you $10. And someone was joking around. Actually, somebody paid me your $10 and said, here's Gareth's $10 that he owes you for that bet because Obama's sending another couple of hundred guys. But you wrote this piece and you persuaded me. It's based on this Washington Post story that, no, really, they're not coming. As Mitchell Prothero put it from Irrible, the Americans are not coming. And when they told you they're not coming, really, they're not coming. So you better go ahead and do your own thing, whatever. You say in your article that the leaders of the Army and the Marine Corps and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and all those guys are adamantly opposed to invading and taking Islamic State territory.
That's correct. I mean, that's clearly the military leadership's position on this. It seems to be pretty deeply embedded in their view of the conflict in the Middle East now, that the fight against Islamic State is not the American fight. It's something that the Arabs should take care of. The U.S. can't do it. I think that's fair to say, or shouldn't do it. And you know, as I say in my article, the one that you just cited, I think the key to that position is really the knowledge that has come from a combination of Iraq and Afghanistan that they're going to get in deeper than they want to be if they start having boots on the ground against Islamic State, that that they cannot foresee the full consequences that would occur from starting that that kind of war on the ground, and they're a bit intimidated by it. Quite frankly, I think that's the bottom line.
Awesome. Well, that's great. But I guess so. Here's the part that, well, there's two things that I was wrong about, really. One is what you just described, the military's willingness to commit to this. I know that you'll remember you reported it, and I still have the clip here somewhere of Jim Mikuláczewski on NBC News, right as Obama's being inaugurated, telling NBC that, hey, I'm here at the Pentagon, and the generals say they don't care what the president says. They're going to stay in Iraq for at least 20 more years. And they stole it fair and square, right, and they're keeping it. And I just assume that, yeah, that's speaking for the Pentagon right there. And if they had a way back into Iraq, especially in a full-scale kind of a way, give me my 56 bases or else kind of a thing, that they'd be happy to take that. And so I was wrong about that, but I was also wrong, I guess very wrong about that, but I was also wrong about the political pressure. Because here we have not Saddam Hussein with the clean-shaven chin and the beret. What is he, French, with his little beret and his olive green, you know, when he's not wearing, you know, an American-style suit with lapels. It's not him. It's the caliph. It's Ibrahim, who's basically Osama himself up there. And they're going to let that slide. And I just thought politically that man, they'll drop an atom bomb on Mosul before they just let there really be a caliphate and let that go. Not that I'm promoting that, but I'm just saying it seemed to me that Washington, D.C. would have one consensus, which is bomb Mosul.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, I think what you were responding to in assuming that that was the case was this kind of hysteria that did develop, obviously, through the news media. And Republican commenters within and outside Congress both on, blaming the Obama administration for not being more muscular in its response. So, what we're starting with here is this dynamic that has long existed in American domestic politics of, the out party in particular using the lack of use of force by the president as a whip to attack them politically, to try to take advantage of it. And that was clearly very much the dynamic that was at work last year when the war against the Islamic State began with the bombing. And I think that, there's a big distinction here, and that this has become clearer, obviously. A big distinction between that dynamic, on one hand, and the interests of the military services and the Pentagon on the other. Because, as I point out in my article, what the service chiefs, the military leadership, and I think it's true as well of the civilian leadership in the Pentagon, the Secretary of Defense and his staff, what they're doing is calculating very carefully, in some cases carefully, in other cases perhaps less carefully, the profit and loss, the gains and risks of committing U.S. forces. And I think it's the calculus is more complex, has more moving parts to it or more possible elements to it than people generally realize.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how much of this really plays into it. I wonder what you think of my old joke, now a year old, that it's really because of, is the music already playing? These things happen. Well, on the other side of the break, I'm going to ask you about how much of this you think has to do with the fact that because of Israel and, I guess, to a lesser extent, Saudi politics in the capital, that we can't really go to war against the Mujahideen because that's who our allies want to win over there. But hold it right there. We'll be right back in just a sec. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. All right, guys, welcome back. I'm Scott. I'm talking with Gareth Porter. He wrote the book Manufactured Crisis on the Iranian Nuclear Program, which we're going to get to those talks here in just a sec. We're talking about the lack of a full-scale war against the Islamic State. Thank goodness, because the Pentagon agrees with us on this. Don't do it. I mean, yes, they have advisors, and they're bombing the hell out of them from the air all the time. I guess not on Vietnam, carpet bombing type levels, but still. So it's not like they're non-interventionists now or anything necessarily. But it does seem, Gareth, like if, and never mind morality or libertarianism or non-intervention or anything like that, but just the empire's prerogatives, it seems like what they might do would be to make a deal with Iran and Assad that will give you money and a little bit of AWACS support or whatever you need to crush these guys for us. Because they are the obvious most natural enemies of the Islamic State, and go ahead and throw in the al-Nusra Front too. Obviously, the Turks don't really mind them at all, would be happy to have the Islamic State on their southern border, apparently, so, or an al-Nusra one or whatever. But they just can't do that because of the politics of Iran and Iran's relationship with Syria. And so they'll just muddle on like this and let the Islamic State continue to exist under a low-scale bombing campaign from now on? Is that basically it?
Well, I think that there is, and I've said this many times on your show, but I think that you've sort of zeroed in on the problem a bit more concretely, and I think it's worth discussing it in more concrete terms now than we have before, and that is the point that is most relevant here, that the White House is indeed subject to some conflicting political forces at work, political pressures coming from different directions. I mean, you know, we've already talked about the sort of domestic politics of, sort of using the lack of adequate use of force against the White House by Republicans. And at the same time, you're absolutely right that the Middle East allies of the United States are not at all eager to prioritize the destruction or even significant weakening of the Islamic State over the problem of either getting rid of Assad or weakening Iran. You know, both of them are part of the same package. So it's true of all of the Middle East allies of the United States, Israel, Turkey, for various reasons, Israel, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and the other Gulf states where the United States has military bases. They're all in the same boat here of wanting to do whatever is possible to weaken Iran. If not, you know, in the case of Israel, I mean, they're more or less openly saying we want regime change. That's still our objective. So, yes, there are conflicting pressures on the White House with regard to the policy toward the Islamic State. And so it's very clear that that when the military takes this position, that they do not want to have boots on the ground against Islamic State, that this is extremely compatible with the interests of the White House at this point, this is a position that the White House is perfectly happy with. For one thing, it gives the White House cover with regard to the Republicans, right? I mean, this is a perfect solution from the White House point of view.
Right. So, in other words, let me do this nuclear deal, and I promise to still be absolutely horrible on Syria and Yemen.
Right. Right.
Huh. Well, that makes good
and,
sense.
And to look the other way at your connivance with the Islamic State, in the case of Turkey, and to some extent the Gulf states, and with regard to al-Nusra, the open political and financial support of the Gulf states with regard to the al-Nusra front, which is, I would argue, and I think it's fair to say that this is becoming the dominant view of specialists looking at Syria, they have become the primary force that endangers the Assad regime.
Mm-hmm. All right, now assume,
the regime.
Assume for me for a minute, for the sake of argument, that they do get the Iran nuclear deal through. Is that going to make the crisis with the Saudis and their anti-Iranian position that much worse? Or are they going to, like I would say they should, breathe a sigh of relief that, oh, good, their nuclear program is more safeguarded than ever before, so no problem?
No, they're not going to take that position because I think it's very clear that the nuclear program was never really the issue for the enemies of Iran in the region. That was a proxy for the much broader issue, the much deeper issue of basically Iran as a threat to their legitimacy, a threat to their power, and of course it varies in the case of Israel versus Saudi what the precise characteristics of the concern is or has been, but in both cases, the fear and desire to weaken Iran has roots that have little to do with the nuclear program. I mean, you know, we know that the Israelis, were threatening to attack Iran, but primarily using that threat to get the United States to attack Iran. You know, not so much for the nuclear program itself, but simply to basically deal a serious blow to the overall power position of Iran in the region, to make Iran a much less a powerful entity in the Middle East. So I think that's what this is really all about. And of course, the Saudi element adds the Sunni-Shia conflict and the Saudi, also the Saudi fear of being overthrown from within, within Saudi Arabia. There's just a terribly irrational fear and trembling in the Saudi government that that adds another dimension to this, that has really increased enormously since the Arab Spring in 2011. So that is definitely a big part of the picture. And again, I just think that the nuclear program is the excuse more than it is the real reason for the policies of really, in the case of Israel, trying to bring about regime change, or at the very least weaken Iran, and in the case of the Saudis, basically to, from their point of view, to defeat any force in the region that is allied with or associated with the Iranians from their point of view.
You have this new piece about the PMD we've talked about, the possible military dimensions and whether Iran has to, quote unquote, fess up to all the things that they've been accused of in a bunch of Israeli forgeries and so forth, as you've reported so well in your book and in all your articles. But do you think that ultimately this is going to break the deal? Can you give us your odds on the final nuclear deal being reached by the end of the month?
It's very difficult for me to make that call. I guess, you know, somebody put a gun to my head and said, what's the odds? Is it better than 50-50 or less than 50-50? I would say slightly better than 50-50, but only slightly, and very low confidence. I have very low confidence, as the CIA would say, in that estimate.
And now, but so Kerry came out and said, hey, I'm climbing down from my ridiculous demand. Don't worry about it, everybody. Whatever happened to that?
When Kerry said he was climbing down from the demand, I think what he was doing was saying that we're gonna try to find a way to handle this so that you know, there's not going to be a meltdown of the negotiations. I think that what that means is that they're still you know, trying to find a formula that would satisfy both the Israelis, the Israeli lobby in Congress specifically, on one hand, and would be acceptable to the Iranians. I have my doubts about whether they can do that. And so I think that in the end they will be, you know, they will have a choice between accepting a climb down that is going to be obvious, on one hand, and calling, you know, walking away from the talks. And I don't know how they're going to handle it. I really don't.
All right, that's it. We're out of time. Thanks so much, Gareth. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks as always, Scott. Good to be back.
That's the great Gareth Porter, y'all. Manufactured Crisis is the book.
Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first. And just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more.
And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code SCOTT when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me.